you're welcome at Angela's house?
No, see, my mom's not that strict. Sometimes she...
You don't have to explain. See this card? That's the world. This is the daughter who hides her feelings behind, like, a mask.
That's her, big time.
But I'm the daughter.
Yeah, but so is she.
See, my mom was adopted, so she has, like, these abandonment issues.
I've got those.
Yeah. Well, look right here. See this card covering you? That's the moon. That's, like, the deadly mother. Like the Wicked Witch.
Wait, should I be scared?
That's nothing. Last time I got death. Mom, show her death. That's one bitching card.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to mean death. It means one door opens, another closes.
Yeah, in your face.
You're having dinner with us, right?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Burn Black podcast. I am your host, B. How are you guys hanging in there this week? We have, okay, Mercury is still in retrograde in Scorpio, but now it's polarity, Taurus. We have a new moon in Taurus, so we got that going on. Let's talk about that for a few minutes, guys. Okay, so what is Taurus? What is Taurus representing in our charts? What is the energy of this moment? Okay, so in astrology, Taurus rules the second house. So the second house is known as the house of possessions. It's known as the house of value. This is where we go to not only find our values, what we value, but our inner value and what we possess in this world, and both, you know, the material world and in our internal world as well. Taurus rules the senses. It's a very cozy sign. It wants to drape itself in comfort because it's ruling the senses. So this is a great time to just sit under the covers and manifest and think about what your personal value is going into this new decade. This has been a really weird couple weeks for so many of us. I've been talking to a number of you, and it's just very funky energy. It feels like a lot of things are ending, and there's a lot of new beginnings, and some of us are really scared about that, and some of us are really excited. But I think what we're all being encouraged to do is really kind of figure out what we value, take a look at what our values are and how those have changed over the last few years. I feel like we're in this collective consciousness moment where a lot of things are happening, where people are not tolerating things that they used to tolerate, and that's great. So this is a really good time to just like take a look at those things. See how you've changed. See the things that you want to manifest. Like, what values are important to you in your relationships? And what have you been letting sit too long? It's a nice time to clean out the closet. This is a nice time to clean out the closet both metaphorically and physically. So I encourage you guys, if you feel like things are not serving you anymore, this is a really good energy to start releasing. I've had to really look at my own personal value a lot this year, and that's been quite difficult. I realize I give a lot of emotional labor to people that don't necessarily give the same in return, and in other places I've just had a lot more gratitude for the people in my life that really like stood by me and have been patient with me and my growth. And you know, now that I'm finally seeing some of the fruits of that labor, it's just like a really great time to just take it all in and not take it for granted and just like be so appreciative of everything that I have. And you know, I'm not anywhere near where I want to be, but you know, I want to enjoy every step of the process. And I think that I'm in a lot more of a mindful present state to do that now. I have been going through some personal things in my life this year that have been quite transformative, and I feel like they have all encouraged me to really do some inner work to figure out my own value. And what is that worth? And that's a weird thing when you are an energy worker. What is your time worth? I guess that's interesting with any job, you know, like defining your value. When you go into work and you get a new job and you have to negotiate your salary, really being asked, what is my worth? That's such a difficult question for someone like me. And this year really made me have to look at that. And coming from like a punk rock background where like, I just have this like negative attitude about money and success, I realized that I'm just being very self-limiting by not really expressing those things. And now that I am, it's interesting because I'm also learning boundaries with that and whether people want to respect those boundaries that I didn't have a year ago. And their responses to that have been quite alarming at times. So that's been interesting to process. Other people have been really gracious and understanding and supportive, and I have so much gratitude, for those people. And it's great because this is like not an easy thing for us to do. We live under capitalism, and especially when you've like never gone to school and you've sort of pined to go to school but can never like afford it. So it's like not like you're on this plan to become anything. So like you've never had to take a look at those things or evaluate those things because you just sort of always assume you're going to be at this like entry level position because that's how we're trained to think because we live under capitalism. But I had a pretty transformative weekend, guys, and I kind of want to talk about it with you guys. Speaking of value, speaking of Taurus, I had the utmost privilege to attend two workshops this weekend called Radical Camaraderie, and they were hosted by a wonderful person named Koryama. And Koryama does a project called Sex Kiki here in Chicago for people of color and that are interested in sexuality and expressing that. And also the fabulous Zoe Ligon, otherwise known as Thongria on Instagram, the Duchess of Dildos. Zoe is the owner of Spectrum Boutique, a Detroit-based sex toy business. It's very geared towards sex education. And Zoe is an amazing writer, and I got to hang out with them this weekend, and they were so wonderful. And I learned so much. The first night we did a workshop called Rebirth After Trauma. And wow, how particularly special that was, because that is exactly what Burn Black is about, rebirth after trauma. And it was a really heavy workshop, but I did want to share some things that I learned the first night. Zoe spoke a lot about covert abuse versus overt abuse. And I think that this is something important to talk about. I talked about it on my friend Barry's podcast, Generic Insight, one time, but I want to make clear that both covert and overt abuse cause the same neuropathway reaction. So when you are doing the healing work, there is really no physical difference in your body between someone physically abusing you and someone overtly emotionally abusing you in a way that you don't quite understand. And they do cause the same reaction in the body. So a lot of my abuse, though physical, the more harsher aspects of it were covert. And I think Zoe was expressing that as well. And that was an interesting thing to be reiterated. And so I kind of wanted to talk about some of the ways in which we kind of don't really look at that are covert abuse in our households. And one of them is, you know, just when parents or a family member sexualizes our body and we lose that agency over our body, when they make comments about our breasts or something about just sexualizing us, which is totally inappropriate, that is abusive. And that is not, I guess that would fall under the umbrella of covert abuse. Other things like tickling and touching in a way that's maybe inappropriate, where they're like pretending to not touch you inappropriately, but they totally are touching you inappropriately. Growing up in like a naked household where there's no boundaries with what you see. All of these things are part of covert abuse and sexual trauma in childhood. And they cause the same reactions as someone actually, you know, abusing you physically. And I just want to make that clear, if that's something that you've gone through, that's something to really look at and, you know, process, because that's something I'm definitely processing. And I think a lot of people are kind of now in this moment right now where we're kind of learning about consent and what that looks like, where we're just kind of processing in the moment, and like we knew things didn't sit right with us growing up in relationships with our parents, whatever it may be. And so their argument is always like, why didn't you say anything back then when it bothered you? Well, a lot of us didn't have the language for it. So that was just an interesting thing to unpack. And also, like, wow, like, just the bravery of these people just sharing their stories and how fully they embraced their sexuality in their careers and their professions, which brought us to the second night where it was about turning your passion into your profession. And I learned so much, because it is my goal to help people get back into their bodies after trauma, because this is something I'm working on and I love building communities. A big thing that I did want to talk about that I picked up at this meeting that was something I really needed to hear, so I want to share it with you guys too. And I think it's something we all need to hear, is that we all have the ability to be toxic in our friendships and our relationships until we go through the process of unlearning what was taught to us that is not, you know, appropriate. And we're not all given these tools growing up. You know, a lot of us grow up with, you know, poor examples. And so these are things that have to be unlearned. And so recognizing your own toxicity is like very important and part of the process, but also having forgiveness. I know for me that's really hard. I can be self-punishing, like so self-punishing. Like right before bed, it all hits me again. I do the grin and bear it, you know. You just think about that stupid thing that you did that someone else probably interpreted some sort of way. Or you think about something stupid that you did that really hurt someone's feelings when you just didn't know better. Or maybe you were in it and you were being a little bit selfish just because you were really in it and you weren't able to see other people on the side of you, and you just say or do this very stupid toxic thing. And I have a hard time forgiving myself for that. And it just like runs in my head like a movie. I also have OCD, which like certainly does not help that at all. But that's all part of shadow work and it's super important. So acknowledging it, but also forgiving yourself for it. So like, I feel like this is something we all could be a little bit more mindful of this week with this Taurus new moon. I just want to like say that this was an amazing weekend for me to kind of reevaluate my own value. And I was going to share this like very brief personal story. I was kind of debating sharing it, but I've always been honest with you guys to a fault, even if it's embarrassing. And I just feel like maybe someone will hear this and they will learn from it, or feel like, you know, they'll feel like this is something they're going through too and maybe write me a letter. But so we can share. Anyway, but I was thinking about how when I moved back to Chicago a few years ago, Like, I didn't really want to date anybody. And I just was, like, working on myself and being mindful and coming from a place where I just wanted to be appreciative of everything. And I made a decision to move back here. And I stuck with it. And I was going to be happy about it. And I just, like, I think some of it was a bit of self-protection, like I'd been hurt, I didn't want to be hurt again, but also there was a general disinterest in dating or having that ever again. And at the time, my friend kept trying to set me up with these people who were really nice, very lovely, some of them were very handsome too, but it wasn't even that it was them. It was like they were all very lovely people, but I just was not in the mindset to date. Like, it was not interesting to me. I just wanted to work on myself. And it was during this time that I started randomly talking to this person online through text, whatever. And I didn't really expect to develop feelings for this person, especially having never met them. But we shared a lot. It was definitely an aspect of trauma bonding because I had never really spoken to somebody who so specifically shared a lot of the things that I had gone through. And it made me realize that, like, part of why I was in that mindset was because I was doing what a lot of people do, where you feel like I'm too much. But how can anyone ever appreciate or love me because I'm too much? But, like, what made my situation in my mind more difficult is that, like, I have never had normal experiences in my life. I don't know what it's like to, for instance, live in a normal family. My parents both died when I was a kid. I don't know what it's like to live in a normal body. I'm not neurotypical. I don't know what it's like to go to school or travel the way other people can, because going to school, I was not raised in a regular school. I went to a school where I was 2 hours away from where my family was from. It was a pretty toxic environment, and I don't really know what normal experiences with travel is, because I haven't really ever been able to travel, and, like, I've always just been, you know, unable to do that. So unless it was traveling for, you know, a specific purpose like work or to visit a friend, I never traveled for pleasure a day in my life. I've never just gone somewhere for pleasure. So when this person started, talking to me and I had interest in them, it's just like, and it was so paralleled that just, like, blew my mind. And it made me feel like it was possible for me to find someone where I wasn't going to be too much for them, and that my atypical experiences didn't demean my value as it did with multiple other people I had tried to date. Like, they were just, you know, I wasn't even being overwhelming with them. It's just like they didn't have any interest once they heard the things that I had gone through in participating in a relationship with someone like me. So, I mean, it is what it is. And needless to say that this friendship relationship with this person did not really end well, and it ended up putting me in this weird position where I just kept having to prove myself to this person, and, like, that I am a good person, that, like, I'm patient, and that, like, I'm a kind person, and that I'm worthy of love and affection, and, you know, just having a relationship. And I couldn't really get this person to, you know, see that. But that's it took me a long time. It was one of those things where it sat in my head for years, and I didn't understand why it did as much as it did. And I mean, it was a pretty hard thing that I went through. And, like, I finally got to the point where I stood up for myself with this person pretty recently. And you know, I had done a lot for this person and they just treated me like garbage time and time again. And, you know, I realize that I do this thing where other people do things to me that really hurt, but because I'm so scared of fighting or losing them, because I've lost so many people in my lifetime, that I end up apologizing to them for them hurting me. And that is so toxic. And I think a lot of us do that. A lot of us do that. And we need to stop. We really need to stop. That, like, is demeaning our value. So under this new Taurus moon, I would encourage you guys to really air it out. Define what value means to you. Let us stop getting in these relationships and friendships where we have to prove our value to someone else, and really have gratitude for the people that see it, the people that feel it, and the people that show it, and that communicate and use their words and work through their shit. Speaking of which, I'm really excited to have Noelle on the podcast today. Noelle is a Sagittarius sun, like me. She is an Aquarius moon, and she's a Cancer rising. And this week, we talk about a podcast that we were supposed to do a year ago. We actually recorded it. It was called Big Thick Energy, and it was supposed to be about fitness. And we just talk about frustration. We talk about stagnancy. She gives me homework at the end. I give her homework. I hope to have Noelle back soon. She's lovely. I hope you enjoy this conversation. I love you guys and appreciate you guys. So if you enjoy this podcast, rate it 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a review. It really helps us. Thank you so much. And here is my darling friend, Noelle.
Excuse me. I'm applying for the receptionist position.
Hold. Reception.
I can't right now. I have to stay and redirect all the incompetents who are coming up here instead of going straight down to personnel like they are supposed to. All right. I'll be right there. You'll have about 12 seconds. You are supposed to go down to personnel. That is on the first floor. There is a great big sign that says personnel. Do you understand?
Yeah. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Tell me how your taco was.
My taco was amazing. I had 2 tacos after a broken up gym session.
That sounds like so nourishing. I find myself eating a lot of tacos just because it seems such an affordable way to eat healthy.
It is. You got your carb, your protein, and your vegetables. And then sometimes you fill it with lettuce, which is just, you know, also a vegetable.
You got the good fat with the avocado.
Oh, you put avocado in yours.
I mean, if I'm feeling fancy.
Yeah, pay the extra.
Always. I mean, not always, but most of the time. Okay, so here's the definitive question. So Noelle is originally from San Diego. You've been living in Chicago for quite some time. You claim that
3 years now.
3 years. Okay. 3 solid years. That's enough time to make a definitive decision. Who has the better burrito and why? What is it that makes it better?
So California by far has the greatest burrito. And the thing that makes it better, I think it's simple. They don't grill it. Over grill the tortilla. Mm-hmm. So like the ingredients there are much more simple, you know, so they of course like heat up the tortilla, but the tortillas are usually always fresh and then they fill them with like whatever. Like, I love a good bean and cheese burrito, and it's kind of hard to come by out here without like all the extra, like,
that's true.
So
I do feel like Chicago has better tortillas, though. I feel like we have all the tortilla factories here.
You do, but I don't understand why they're not that great. Like, I don't get it. Like, in my humble opinion.
I'm going to trust you. Okay, so who has better Indian food?
Honestly, here, there's a lot more Indians out here.
Yeah. You have to come out my way. I'm by Devon in Chicago.
I hear is the hub of Indian cuisine.
Great Indian markets. I actually lived with a girl for a while who was from India.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me how to cook all of these delicious things that she grew up with that are like staples of her family. And they're all like under $5 to make, because the majority of it is just the spices. Like, the spices are the most expensive part, but everything else is just very simple.
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that. I've only ever had one dish that my dad used to make, and I don't really have a lot of familiarity with that part of my culture, so I would like to try more Indian food in my future, though.
Maybe we should get together soon and I can teach you how to make food from your culture.
Yes, please.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you about a few things today. Noelle is like my fitness guru.
Oh, please don't.
You know a lot about nutrition. You're just kind of business savvy. You're my boss of a friend, I would say. You just kind of dominate everything that you do.
But see, I know a lot, but I don't, what is it? Do as I say and not as I do. Is that the same? Because I don't follow my advice at all.
I feel like you're kind of like the smarty pants that walks into the classroom, already knows all the answers, and just gets bored and walks away.
Legitimately, that was always my on my report card. Like, I forgot what the teacher term was, but it was always like off task, but does really well on assignments.
Maybe you were meant to be homeschooled, or like, I don't know, maybe you needed to go to one of those fancy new schools.
Probably.
Maybe. How do you handle frustration? Like, because you must get frustrated a lot if you sort of can pick things up very easily. Whereas, like, I have a harder time with that. So I just get frustrated in the sense that I can't pick something up. But if you're, mm-hmm. like, constantly feeling like everything is kind of beneath your skill set, and you are a person that loves challenges.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
I think it's just kind of honestly, it's tough. and I think maybe that alone is my challenge, which is kind of fun, like an answer in itself. But I guess handling it more so is just kind of like, I kind of humble myself more nowadays, because I used to think I knew everything, and turns out I still know everything, but not everything. So
you know everything, but you don't know everything about everything.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just humbling myself and looking from another perspective of just, you know, how can I become better at this, yeah, versus like already knowing how to do something.
Do you feel like you're always curious? Because I feel like that's what keeps me excited. It's just that I'm genuinely always curious.
Yes, like 1,000% yes. I mean, it's, I don't want to get dark right now or anything, but
this is the place to get dark.
I think that's the reason why I never killed myself, is because I was way too curious to see what was in store for me.
Do you feel like there's always this like sense of hope, even when there's not, and it feels bleak?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand where that comes from, because I I don't know how to say this without coming off like a douchebag, but I'm a realist. Like, I'm just very logical, you know? I'm very logical with a lot of things, but I still, like, fantasize about other, you know, daydream about random things, you know?
You're an Aquarius moon like me. I can totally get that. It's funny because you and I are so different in so many ways. Like, mm-hmm. we couldn't be further apart. But, like, I think emotionally, like, we don't give each other enough credit that we kind of are the same. Mm-hmm. We just handle it totally different. But, like, if you were to cut open our insides, they would look exactly the same.
Yes, I definitely probably agree. Because you always seem to relate to something I say on a emotional level. And I with you as well.
Same. That's why we get along. Two Aquarius moons. I think that, like, the problem is, like, you don't know a lot about astrology, so, but I will teach you.
Yeah.
The stereotype for the Aquarius moon is that we're very emotionally detached, and I think I call bullshit on that. And I think that I brought this up with you the other day. I asked you, do you feel like you process your emotions best when you're consuming media, whether that's like music or like watching a movie, and then also the act of movement and doing two things at once? Because I kind of feel like I, when I'm manifesting, when I'm thinking, when I'm trying to like get through an emotion, I have to put my headphones on and I have to like walk through it.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I'm kind of I don't know what happened to me, but like anytime I listen to something, like I sometimes start crying, and I think it was my birth control, to be honest. Like, it's just kind of
whack. Is it a new occurrence? It just happened since the birth control?
It's happened since the birth control. I just get random urges to cry, but I think it happens more when I'm, you know, sensory.
Yeah.
What is the word?
Sensory overload? Or
Not even like a sensory overload. Like if I'm using one of my senses. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I really feel that that's true. Like, I think that that might be an Aquarius moon thing. I think that we feel things through. Because, okay, so Aquarius is about ideas. And it's mm-hmm. about electricity. And it's about what's forward thinking. And so I think that, like, music is always going to be future oriented in a sense where it's like, you know, we are listening to it on our iPads probably or our iPhones. So we're using technology, which is like an Aquarian thing, to actually feel our emotions. And then there's also like the forward movement, meaning like you exercise when you feel frustrated or upset or you need to process something. I guess mm-hmm. technically I do too, though I don't often think of just going for walks as exercise, but that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maybe that's like the modern take of the Aquarius moon. We're not detached, guys. We actually are quite emotional.
I didn't even know like I was an Aquarius moon until you told me there were other signs of...
Now you're learning.
And like I've always kind of had a weird... thing about Aquariuses because my dad was an Aquarius and he was very emotionally shut off, and then I dated a guy briefly when I first moved out here who was a struggling comedian, like struggle bus comedian, and was also, I later found out, was an Aquarius, and he actually, I think he had the same birthday as my dad, which was kind of weird too.
When was your dad's birthday?
January 24th.
Okay, so so I'll teach you something real quick. Mm-hmm. There are three deacons for each sign, first, second, and third. And so I find people who are first and second deacon Aquarius are totally different than third deacon ones, because I think mm-hmm. the third deacon ones are much more sensitive. It would be easy to say they're more Piscean because they're closer to the Pisces cusp,
mm-hmm.
but they're actually ruled by Libra. So they're all about partnerships, needing the other. Like, there's always an invested interest with like human sexuality, I feel like, with Aquariuses that are towards the end of the month, like, they're just always thinking about the other person, mm-hmm. and they're like the more, I guess they're the they are the less detached ones, but I feel like the beginning of the month people are very detached.
Yeah, that's
sounds a little more Capricorn-y. So I wanted to ask you, we've been talking a lot lately about frustration and yes. how to deal with frustration, because that's something that you've been struggling with. And I was doing some research today, and I found this article from Psych Today, and it mm-hmm. says, frustrated people tend to smile more when they're experiencing frustration, according to the researchers at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Analysis of smiles show that not all smiles are indicative of the emotion of happiness. There's a fake smile, a polite smile, a nervous smile. According to the MIT researchers, most people don't believe that they smile a lot when they're frustrated, yet they do, as proven by facial scans during the study. And so I wanted to ask you, like, when you're feeling frustrated, or how attached are you to your actual body? Like, can you, what do you feel physically in your body? Are you a smiler?
I actually have a weird story about, like, smiling and even laughing, because I feel like smiling and laughing are kind of interchangeable. Mm-hmm. Only just one's more noisy, if you will. But yeah. I actually, like, let out a giggle when my dad was dying, and it is nothing. Like, me and my dad had a great relationship, like, you know, as best as an emotionally unavailable, like, hit my mother and him were still together up until the day that he passed away. But we had, like, a quote-unquote normal, you know, nuclear-type family, Catholic. And when he passed away, I, like, giggled, you know, as he was passing into the afterlife. And I disguised it with a, like, sob, even though, like, I had my head down and I was, like, smiling, but, like, you know, trying to cover it.
But it's that nervous laughter where you just, like, don't know what else exactly. to do, so you have to laugh.
Exactly, exactly. I laugh at the worst times. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
It's nervous laughter. Yeah. It's what it, oh, I have a story for you. I got pulled over by the police once. Ooh. I was with my ex-boyfriend, and this was in Delaware, mm-hmm. and we were trying to find a place called the Samaritan Outreach. Shout out to the Samaritan Outreach. They were a nonprofit organization that had a food pantry, mm-hmm. and I was applying for food stamps because at the time I was extremely broke and I couldn't afford anything. Yeah. And so we went to go find this place, and usually a lot of these places, at least where I'm from, tend to be in not the best neighborhoods. And it was first thing in the morning, and my then boyfriend and I were driving, and we went the wrong way down a one-way street, and the police stopped us, and we're like, fuck, we're gonna get a ticket, this sucks, because we're already broke and we're trying to find this nonprofit to apply for food stamps. Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna get a ticket. And it was one of the scariest altercations that I've ever had with the police, but they immediately accused us of buying drugs, had guns pointed at us, searched the car, the whole deal. And I just kept laughing because I was so nervous. Yeah. And, like, I had guns pointed at me.
Yeah.
And he kept asking me why I was laughing and accusing me of being high.
Like,
don't laugh at cops, guys.
I laugh at them all the time, to be honest. And
I mean, that's really fair. Did you see that meme of the girl, or it wasn't a meme, it was a video of the woman talking to the cop, and she's like, I worked at Boston Market.
No.
I'll have to send it to you. Sorry, guys. Now we're going off center. But yeah, nervous laughter is a really is a real thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't find that I do it a lot when I'm frustrated. I think I'm just more impulsive and reactionary when I'm frustrated.
You get hot? Does your body level like increase?
Yeah. It's just very, I'm trying to like curb my reactionary self, you know, and like think through my emotions versus just like
respond, not react.
Yeah, exactly. And not being like an asshole. I think this year has been a lot of introspective learning for me. So
isn't it great to learn that like the ways in which you grew up do not have to be the ways that you live the rest of your life or raise your children?
I was raised in a very yelling household.
Same.
And and it shows.
There's that old joke. There's like the Seinfeld thing where it's like, my mother was a yeller, my father was a yeller.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it is, you know. And even though
no one in my family apologizes.
No.
That's a big thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if your family does this, but like my family, one apologizes. We just pretend it didn't happen and move on.
I mean, mine was like, you know, if my dad like hurt my feelings or hurt my mom's feelings, he would just take us out to dinner, you know, like just kind of throw it under the rug. But this is how I love you because I'm, you know, taking you out and trying to make it up to you.
Do you think your father was probably just never taught how to process his emotions, or do you feel
I 1000% agree with that.
Yeah.
But what was the other part you were gonna say in case anyone else?
I wasn't sure if it was more like a thing where it's like with my family where there's just the narcissism where it's like I'm just not gonna admit I'm wrong.
Oh. No, yeah, I just think like in his family he kind of didn't have his father left his mother when he was young, from what I remember. There's so many secrets in my family, so like I have to hear things from like my sisters. But
yeah.
Same. It's like the Catholic guilt, and you know, I know you grew up in a Jewish household, so situation was just very like hush hush. And yeah, like my dad, like he just grew up without a father mostly, and you know, like I think that it's the hyper masculinity, what it boils down to is just, you know, trying to be the man of the house, trying to man up, you know. What does it mean to man up exactly, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's funny because I think my dad, so I was a change of life baby. You were also, from what I understand, kind of a change of life baby, right?
Yes, I was.
We both have like siblings. I got to meet Noelle's sister. Noelle's sister is awesome. Shout out to Noelle's sister if she's listening. I love her. But it's strange because like I was kind of like the do-over. Did you have that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. It was.
So your experiences are totally different than your siblings.
Oh, a complete 180.
So there is like the process of the man that learned a little bit. So we had like a better image. Jeez, I sometimes like sit and think, try to put myself in the shoes of my sister. And I'm like, to have that experience of my father must have been terrible.
Yeah, like
I'm really glad we got the version that we did.
I know. I can't imagine what it's like to like have to see that side of that, of you know, our dads. Like it's just kind of like,
yeah,
it's almost unbelievable because you didn't see it, but obviously it's like just because you didn't see it doesn't mean it didn't exist at the time.
What do you think brought upon the change for you, like for your dad? Like, do you think it was a divorce and like losing someone, or do you think it was like having a child and deciding maybe this didn't work the first time.
Wait,
or
what do you, sorry, I like, I kind of lost you there. So what, can you explain that for me?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to, I was asking if, what do you think brought upon the change with your father? Oh. Like, do you think it came more from, you know, a marriage failing or the change of life baby that you were and just being like, this didn't work the first time, I'm going to try something new? Or did he have like a personal transformative experience?
I legitimately can't really place it. I know it was always, I'm sure my mom put like an ultimatum out there, but
yeah,
he was also, he wasn't a dumb guy. Like he, I knew that. I honestly don't think I had ever seen my dad cry up until the day that he found out he was terminal. And, you know,
what did that feel like?
It was a very interesting experience because someone that is, you know, supposed to be, and I'm not even saying dads aren't supposed to cry, you know, that's not at all. It's like just one of those things where someone that's your guardian shows vulnerability in a way you've never experienced before.
Exactly. Exactly. I feel, okay, so my father was the same, very, like, masculine,
mm-hmm.
like, toxic masculinity. Like, if you were to draw a picture of what that would look like, it would be my father.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then I remember the first time I saw him cry. And I told my brother this really pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like my, a few of my family members have a different take on it. Like, I think, so I asked my dad. My dad had an estrangement from my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad walked out on my brother and my sister, essentially, for my mom and her kids. Yeah. And so, yeah, not a great guy.
Yeah.
And so my brother grew older and he had a daughter, my beautiful niece Savannah, who I love. And Savannah was a baby and my dad found out he was a grandfather and he decided that he wanted to go to Texas to go fix his relationship. Mm-hmm. And so he goes on this trip. I never really find out from his point of view how it went. Mm-hmm. But when he came back, my dad was crying. And I just, it was so startling because I'd never seen him cry before.
Yeah.
And
like, how old were you?
And I was 12.
Okay.
And this was 6 or 7 months before he died.
Yeah.
So that's even more why it sticks with me. But yeah, he's crying. And I asked him why he's crying. And he says, well, this is how, this is going to just show how ignorant my dad is, but he said that he was crying because he went to go visit my brother and he was poor.
Oh.
And like, that didn't really make sense to me at 12. And I also didn't really know the dynamics of like what happened between them or why.
Yeah.
So I guess that was just an easy thing to tell a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. And, I told Savannah that recently and she was like, we were never poor. She's like, but like, it's just funny to us because my brother's pagan and he travels a lot and he's just a very like new agey guy. So he just has like a lot of rocks in his house.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of just his style.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but regardless, we kind of all think it was because my dad realized he fucked up and it took having a grandchild to really see how much he missed out on. And he just was like very proud of Savannah. He loved Savannah so much. And he like had pictures of her everywhere in the house. Mm-hmm. And like, I think he just was very moved to have become a grandfather. And I think that that experience, and then maybe also in conjunction with what happened with my brother, like, and seeing he fucked up, it just made him cry. That's what it took to make a grown man cry.
Yes. Sometimes it's just simple things like, you know, having a grand child.
It's interesting that it took life and death for our dads to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's almost like a play.
I love the parallels between us.
I know. I never really realized that until...
It's an interesting case study always when I meet someone with like a similar placement and I can make these observations because it just helps me with my astrology. But still, okay, if you're listening and you're an Aquarius moon and you have a similar story, please email me and Noelle immediately.
Exactly. I'm still learning, but this is all very fascinating.
Okay, so we want to talk about frustration. How do you handle frustration? Also, like, what do you think is the root? Is it boredom for you? Is it stagnation?
I think it's all of the above. I get bored very easily. I have a lot of unfinished projects. I have a lot of interests. I'm a woman of many interests. I just kind of always want to try something, and if I don't get it down the first time, and or if, you know, I'm just not, like, if I don't think I'm doing the best at it, then sometimes I just get frustrated and, like, move on to the next thing, you know? Like, I just kind of...
So you need something that's always stimulating you?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I think it's interesting because my commitment to things is very sparse, but my commitment to people is very true.
Yeah.
You know, I like routine with people. But I like routine in my life too. It's just like, you know, activities wise, it's just, or even work. It's just, I get very, like, I have a lot of work on my desk right now, you know, at my job, but I just feel very underwhelmed, and
yeah,
because I'm bored and, like, I want to do something more, and but then they tell me to do something, I'm like, no, that's not what I want to do, I want to do something else, you know. And it's, I think it's, like, just the reason why I get frustrated is not only because of, like, the lack of stimulation of things, but it's because I don't know what I want.
Yeah.
So,
have you been journaling?
No, not really.
You need to start journaling and asking yourself these questions, and I think you're gonna get a lot of answers if you make that a 5-minute habit every day. Yeah,
I agree. I mean, journaling is another thing that I started and never, you know, picked up.
Okay, here's my homework for you, Noelle. Okay. Gotta take me up on it. You gotta get yourself a nice tarot deck. Get yourself your first tarot deck.
Are they supposed to be, like, gifted them? So should I give you money to get me one?
You don't have to be gifted. I mean, that is always nice, but I bought myself my own first tarot deck.
Okay.
And I have a million more. In fact, I would lend you one if you wanted. But I think that you should find one that you personally connect to and make it your new best friend. And I think that you should start every day in the morning or before bed, mm-hmm. asking yourself one of these questions, pulling the tarot card, reading for 5 minutes, you know, something new, like, what does this card mean? How does this give me the answer that I want? Then you're also using your brain to, like, kind of be imaginative to draw comparisons between the two.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean for me personally? You're analyzing yourself and you're learning a new skill, which is tarot.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not going to get bored if you're constantly, like, being encouraged to self-reflect and learn. Plus, it's about your favorite subject, you.
I mean, I am conceited. Just kidding. I am that bitch. Just kidding.
You are a Sagittarius.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, like, trying to force you to do tarot if you don't want to do tarot, but I think that would be something really cool for you to do and be constantly learning and, like, also learning about yourself.
That could be a thing. I think I just get imposter syndrome with things too, like, into just very minute things, like interests, you know, like, oh, that's not supposed to be my hobby. That's so-and-so's hobby. You know, it's just kind of weird little thing. You can't
make everything your hobby. Nothing belongs to anyone. Do you know how many people do tarot?
I know. It's just kind of like, because I've always been, like, a skeptic about it, and I'm just now, you know.
Well, you're not using it for the magic part. You're using it for self-reflection. Mm-hmm. You can ask the tarot cards questions you might want to ask your therapist, but then you're encouraged to journal them and kind of dig and see what that means for you, you know. Yes. You're not using magic, you're just, the magic is you.
Yes.
It's like, okay, I'm gonna make you do, I'm gonna, that's it, Noelle, I'm commanding that you steal my hobby for the betterment of the world, your frustration, and society.
Well, you know, I might take you up on that commandment.
Okay, so frustration. What are some things that you can do to better manage your frustration? Have you found something that's, like, effective for you that you would recommend?
I just picked up a routine of working out regularly. That's kind of helped me because it just kind of lets my body take the brunt of the frustration, and so by the time I'm done, I'm already exhausted, and, you know, I've exerted myself, and, you know, sometimes my workouts are better with that. I also took up running, and running is really fun. I know a lot of people are probably rolling their eyes, but because
no, it makes you happy. Running is great.
I think running is probably one of my newer hobbies. I'm not that great at it, but, you know, it is what it is. I was,
helps with depression, gets you out of the house.
What was that?
I said it helps with depression. Yes, and it gets you out of
the house. I agree. Yeah, exactly. And you know, sometimes there are moments in the morning where I'm on my runs, where it just kind of feels like I'm the only person on the earth, because sometimes I get up pretty early, or
I love that.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like a refreshed feeling, you know.
Totally. Okay, so what are some simple exercises you can do if you're at work? Okay, let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. We were talking about I coined the term Carolines because I'm obsessed with the movie Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And in that movie, there's a character named Caroline, and she's a bitch, and she's like the office, like, how would you describe, Noelle, how would you describe a Caroline?
Just kind of like condescending, know-it-all. Condescending, know-it-all, and like,
I feel like that's,
yeah, like the two main traits.
Yeah, everyone has one of these at work. What do you do to handle your frustration with Carolines? How do you deal with them?
Well, I honestly have kind of let a lot of things roll off my shoulders, you know, and mm-hmm. It's not to say that that stuff doesn't really bother me, because, you know, it does to a point, but I've come to a point where, well, okay, so I guess in my workplace, I work with mainly men, and they're all attorneys, and they're all, you know, very young, you know, successful attorneys, and the women in the office are the admins. We're all like paralegals or receptionists or law clerks, you know. So mm-hmm. I think when I first started, I wasn't sure of anyone's personality, and I think I just have a very like chill way about me where I am kind of a chameleon and I just blend in, but like I'm not going with the sheep, you know. I'm my own person, and yeah. You know, if we're gonna be friends, we're gonna be friends. If not, like, you know, whatever. And I just kind of like got to the point where, what's the saying, empowered people empower people. So I think when people are like a Carolyn, they're very insecure and, exactly. You know, they don't have good qualities about them. And I think it's a learning process, you know, to figure out your confidence and your abilities. And, you know, you don't have to know everything and you don't have to be mean to everyone. So,
yeah,
that's just kind of just learning about yourself makes you a better person.
Yeah. I feel like when I was working in an office and I would get frustrated about Carolyn's or other people, mm-hmm. I feel like I just went home and I wrote about it and like made it a stand-up routine that I was never going to do.
So are you ever going to get into that? That's your stand-up?
I think
we should talk about this after. You know, or possibly bring me on again to your podcast. Yes. And, you know, maybe you'll have some.
I don't feel like I'm funny. I just like making fun of people.
A lot of people don't think they're funny. The problem is the people who think they're funny are already out there. And the people who don't think they're funny but are actually funny aren't doing anything about it, you know?
Yeah.
But, fair. Yeah, I think.
I feel like I'm an astrologer. I'm a healer. I'm happy.
You should be a comedic astrologer.
A comedic astrologer? Oh my goodness. This weekend, speaking of which, I got to meet the fabulous Zoe Ligon, mm-hmm. aka at Thong Rhea. She did two lectures this weekend that were just completely empowering, but she was talking about how she now refers to herself as a sex educator. It was the combination of the two. Mm-hmm. I forget how she said it, but I felt like there was no better description for her.
And you know, that could be something you could, you know, put, not that specifically, but just something where, you know,
I do feel like I try to combine zines and doing things DIY that way, very cut and paste what I've been doing since I was 2 years old, yeah. Which is who I am. I combine that with like astrology, which is like another love of mine, but also like journaling and basically being open to anything that could be helpful in my life to help me evolve and, you know, share that community with other people. I don't know if comedy goes in there.
Well, I think honestly, and we're probably gonna, you know, you might like this, you might not, but this is like, what if you wrote you know, what are those horoscopes, like a monthly horoscope, but just lighthearted and like funny and just pretty.
I tried to do that a little bit already on Patreon.
Oh, okay. So, well, everyone needs to get onto your Patreon. I recently joined.
I'm gonna plug my Patreon now.
You definitely need to do that, and I will help you do that. But I think that's my homework for you, is plugging yourself and practicing your comedy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to close out by saying that Noelle and I, a year ago, we're going to do a pod. We did record a podcast. It sounded like it was recorded under the sea. And then SpongeBob took a shit on it. And then, we did do a podcast. It was called Big Thick Energy. And it was going to be about fitness and nutrition. And just like the idea initially was something about dating with me. What was it?
Oh, we were gonna make you go on dates and review that. Not review them like in a materialistic way, but review how you felt, like
do a scene for
it. Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't know, you know, if you're,
yeah. And then it didn't happen. and then I never went on dates.
Yeah, but
just kidding.
I mean, get back out there and, you know, yeah, we can do a non-official one like that.
Oh god. I don't think, I think I'm better off with, I'm sticking with the comedy homework. All right. I'm going to have Noelle back soon, and we're going to report on our homework. Noelle, is there anything that you want to share with the Broom Black audience that's, like, been helpful or that you're really liking right now?
I think the most key thing, like, I've learned, I'm just going to share what I've learned this year. Maybe it'll help other people who were in my position before, which was just a very, like, insecure. I'm not even, like, the most confident person right now, but I think I've learned a lot of body image. I know a lot of body image runs very rampant today, but a lot of it has gotten positive. Like, a lot of people have, including myself, have unlearned, you know, fat phobic characteristics that they once, you know, had before. And I kind of, like, I think the first time I ever realized I was confident, and I use that word loosely, is when I didn't feel the need to talk shit about people I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I stick with that. I don't really, sometimes, like, I'll, like, catch myself saying, like, you know, to my boyfriend, I'm like, oh, that person's, like, shoes are ugly or something. And that's like, why, what's the point of even saying that? Like, it doesn't make me feel any better.
Can I stop you for a second to ask you a question?
Yeah.
How much of that do you think is cultural to the environment in which you grew up in? Because you grew up in San Diego.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my family, my internal immediate family was very stuck on image. Not materialistic wise, but thinner was better, you know. And I have health issues that make me a little more curvier than some, you know. And, you know, especially my sisters. Thank you. That's very nice to you. I think you are beautiful as well. And
I wasn't fishing for a compliment, but thank you.
I know. But a lot of that was just kind of, as I've grown older, I've learned more about my conditions, and I've, you know, realized, like, just because, like, I'm working out, and, you know, I used to shame people about, like, not doing things the way I do them, and I'm just kind of learning, like, not everyone is built for the things I do, not everyone is built, like, you know, to do things a certain way. And just be nice, you know, and be understanding.
It's so interesting. I, like, my father was, like, very fat phobic.
Yeah.
Like, very. But, like, I was always, like, it's funny. I got called fat a lot, but I was, like, not fat at all.
Yeah.
And also my sister was, like, pretty much terrorized by our father for being overweight. Mm-hmm. Her whole life. And so, like, it was, like, I kind of grew up with the same thing, but I, like, it was the opposite with me, where it's, like, I grew up just being, like, that girl is so beautiful, why would she want to be my friend?
Yeah.
Like, that was my complex. Aww. Like, and it was horrible, because, like, all of my friends, I mean, it's not horrible, but all of my closest friends were extremely model-typed gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like, Melissa, you've seen pictures of her, was gorgeous.
Yes.
Like, she was a model.
Yes.
And Casey is equally as gorgeous, you know? And so I just always sort of felt like the weird, awkward friend that I didn't understand why these girls wanted to hang out with me. And so I'm kind of doing an opposite transition that you are right now with, like, self-image stuff, where it's like, I deserve everyone is beautiful. Like, I need to stop that criticizing myself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you wouldn't say that about someone else. Why would you say that about yourself, you know?
I know. And plus, it's such a terrible way of, like, thinking, too, in the sense that, like, maybe my friends want to be friends with me because I'm, like, interesting and great and, like, a good friend, not because of what I look like. And then, like, I don't choose my friends by what they look like.
Yeah.
What is that thought process that I do to myself?
Yeah.
That, like, is so absurd.
Exactly. It's, I feel like
we hold ourselves to, like, crazy standards.
Exactly. Like, we don't give ourselves enough credit, but we will be quick to give everyone else credit. And sometimes we should flip that around, you know?
Totally. I feel like we all have that inner child inside of us we're trying to heal. Mine is totally Josie Grossi from Never Kissed.
Yes.
So I will leave you. Noel, thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I don't really know if I contributed anything good to anyone tonight, but even if I didn't, I just love to hear the sound of my own voice. So honestly, I don't.
Speaking like a true Sagittarius.
Honestly, I don't. But yeah, no, it was great. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Oh, so this could be like the last episode of Wichita ever. I mean, maybe I wrote the series finale.
Are you smiling? This isn't a birthday party. It's a funeral.
It's not a happy smile. It's like a nervous smile. When I found out my grandma died, I laughed.
Did you guys know that your feet are actually more receptive than your hands are because they contain a lot more nerve endings? Okay, so here's a simple grounding exercise for when you're disassociating that you can do at home, and it'll help you get back into your body. I want you to go into your bathroom, and I want you to sit at the edge of your tub, and I want you to blast them with hot, then cold water in 10-second intervals. And while you're doing this, I want you to start paying attention to what each one of those sensations feels like on your feet. I want you to wiggle your toes one by one as you slowly become more grounded into your body and aware of the sensations on your skin, what they feel like. When you're done, I want you to stand up. I want you to stretch. I want you to acknowledge that you are more present into your body by looking in the mirror and giving yourself a mantra that grounds you. I stand firm in my body. I take care of my body. I love my body. Whatever it is that you are working on, I want you to say that into the mirror, fully grounded. Meaning it. This has been a self-care tip by Burn Black. And now for the self-care tip of the week.
All right, guys, so here is my self-care tip of the week. Best thing you can do when you start out on a new project or anything, it could be self-healing, anything in life, just don't care what people think about you. Try not to care what people think about you. I know it's really hard to do that, but it will help you so much in the long run because you won't have those other influences in your life that you don't need. You need to listen to yourself and listen to your soul. And it will really, really help you. And that's about it. Thanks, guys.
Okay, kiddos, that's the episode. If you enjoyed it, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. It helps us. And join my Patreon. It only costs $1 and you get a monthly e-zine, and that's great. Who doesn't love free help, right? And that's at patreon.com/burnblack. Follow me on Instagram @burnblackscene. Email me any questions that you may have, at burnblackzine@gmail.com. And of course, you can order a reading, message me by DM if you have a question. I love you guys. I hope you have a great week.
Burn Black.